science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
Alrighty, first up, the right to try.
The right to try.
What is indeed. This?
Have you not done your background reading?
Well, there was. So there, you sent two links, though, right? You sent an older article and a newer article. Yes. So this means that this is now
law.
Law? It's in
the States.
Done.
Yes. Okay, so background to this. I guess we could ask the question, what would you do if you found yourself terminally ill and you had the choice of, I guess, you know, taking any old thing that you wanted to take in order to try and get yourself better? That's the background to all of this, okay? So in the States, as is often in the rest of the world, any drug that's going to be made legal has to go through stringent trials, which take years and years and years, and you go through three phases of trials, and eventually at the end of that, if it passes all those trials, then it can be sold as a drug. But now what has happened is that they have passed a law, this is the right to try law, which now says that if a drug has passed phase one trials, which are human trials on healthy volunteers just to see if there's any sort of side effects or anything like that, then it can be offered to patients who are not normally liable for clinical trials, they being generally people with terminal illnesses. And so what this then means is that you can now offer untried drugs, pretty much untried drugs, to anybody who's willing to pay for them. And I think there's a few ethical issues there that we might sort of talk about.
Well, yeah, where do you begin? Okay, I mean, what are we saying? What are we talking about when we say pay for them? How much are we talking about?
Okay, well, the one example, so this was made law last month, and so there's already been one company now who has offered one of their drugs as a possible trial for motor neurone disease, which is also called ALS, which is also called Lou Gehrig's disease, which I didn't actually know that they were one and the same thing. They should call it Stephen Hawking's disease because that was what he had. Yeah, yeah. And so they have got a drug which has passed phase one trials. They don't have any drugs on the market at the moment, so therefore they've got no revenue. So, you know, they're just a sort of a starting out company, and now they are offering this to as a possible cure or treatment or whatever for ALS. And so they're sort of talking in the vicinity of six figures for this, for treatment. So, you know, it's not cheap.
Okay, so people that, this is not a disease that is this fatal?
It's treatable, yes.
It is a fatal disease over time.
Yes.
Now, that means if you have it at any point, you're allowed to, if you have the money, go and try this.
Yes, indeed.
Drug.
Yeah.
And will this only be for fatal diseases?
I think that's the thing. I think they're looking at basically people who have no other option.
Okay.
And so that's, you know, that's the safeguard built into there. And, you know, I, speaking for myself, I guess if I had something like that, then I would probably be willing to try, you know, anything.
That's weird. You seem to say that it is the company that is sort of going after patients that are terminally ill.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be better if it was patients kind of doing the research and realizing that there are drugs? I find it weird that companies would like go after patients to have them buy basically their own trial.
Yeah, is the money that much because they need that much to make the drug? Or are we just talking capitalism?
Well, the thing is that so they're not going to be covered by insurance, basically. So if you want this, your insurance company's not going to pay for it because it's not a tried and tested remedy. So you are going to have to pay for it out of your own pocket. Excuse me. It could well be a very expensive drug, or it could not. And that's the big problem with this, because you can get unscrupulous people like good old, what was his name? Martin Shkreli or whatever. Who could sell you, and they could sell you sugar pills, which would pass a phase one trial because they would do no harm. And they could sell you sugar pills for, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands
of
dollars.
Who is checking?
You have no idea.
Who is checking this?
Good question.
Okay. Also, the ethics. Are you also raising the ethics around this is clearly only going to be for a certain group of the population?
It does look that way, doesn't it? If you can afford it.
Many people will not be able to get this and therefore not have the right to try, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was brought in by the Republicans, so You know, need we say more in that respect? Am I being naughty by saying that?
I think
know.
So. Are we going to do the sting? Okay. No, but you make a point. I mean, this is highly problematic,
but then,
is
then
it
again,
not?
You balance that up with the whole, you know, freedom of choice thing,
and the possibility of cure.
Well, the possibility, you never know.
Surely you could have made it so that there would be more ways of checking the actual drugs. I don't know, you could make it phase two instead of phase one, or you could, you know.
But then that just takes so much time. Yes.
Does the research continue if these people pay for the drugs?
Apparently that's the idea of it, is that this then sort of runs in parallel with going into phase two and phase three trials.
They will be looking into these people.
And then they can potentially, I guess, use these people as subjects within these trials or the results of these trials.
That's also kind of problematic, because that's bypassing the normal system.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, the system is there for a reason, you know, and it's to stop potentially dangerous things coming onto the market. And even having said that, then dangerous things do unfortunately get through this rigorous system.
But also then it changes the experiment, which makes it an unfair experiment, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, absolutely it does, because all of the experiments in these cases are sort of double blind, so, you know, nobody knows who's getting what.
Yeah.
Some people are getting the placebos and other people are getting the, you know, so there's a way of doing these things. And, yeah, I don't know.
That's an American law.
But then I suppose then you do have to, I don't know, I'm just trying to appeal to those people that would also be, you know, highly excited about this, right?
Yes.
It does provide some hope, perhaps.
And as the great Ben Folds once said, hope is a bastard. It is. It's you know, in a situation like that, it absolutely is. It's almost the worst damn thing. And these low-life buggers that prey on people like this, you know, with snake oil and everything, and, you know, they're going to be out there. They're going to be loving this. So
actually getting pulled into getting a treatment that, well, is not even a treatment.
Yes.
It was never intended to be.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. So, you know, there you go, listeners. There's both sides of the argument there. I don't know which side I come down on, really, to tell you the truth. I think it's an extraordinarily
not our job,
difficult,
though, is it? That's
no,
what,
not
well,
our
we're
job.
Here just to provide the information, right, Alan?
Yeah. God forbid we should take sides. Yes.
So. All right. So we'll move on. Supercomputers.
Indeed.
And there is a reason that we're talking about this.
Yeah,
today.
Yeah. So there's a supercomputer out there now. So you often hear of sort of the increase in computing power and stuff like that, and the fact that when I say we, I mean, you know, NASA sent somebody to the moon with a computer that had 64K of RAM, I think, something like
far
that.
Far out.
Yeah, I know.
Not a lot.
And it just makes what they did in those days just you appreciate it so much more.
Yeah.
You realize that they really were just...
They had nothing,
yeah, not compared to what we've got today. And, you know, you've got way more bloody power in your PC on your desk than they ever had
to send someone to the moon,
you know. So bigger and better and, you know, all that sort of thing. So now the Americans have released, I guess, the fastest computer on the planet.
Who had it before them?
The Chinese.
Okay, what are we talking? How do we measure this?
Okay, we measure this thing in terms of flops, which are floating point operations per second.
Okay, it's just the word? Or okay, it's an acronym.
So essentially calculations, let's say. Right. So a floating point operation per second is sort of a calculation sort of thing. And so this new computer can do a grand total of 200 quadrillion calculations per second.
So that's next stage after trillion.
Yes, it is. Okay. Yes, it is the next stage after trillion. Well done.
Far
yes,
out.
So quadrillion. So that is 2 followed by 17 zeros. 17 zeros, yes. 200 quadrillion.
Do you think that Alan Turing, like, ever imagined this would
he couldn't.
Be the case?
He couldn't, surely.
Okay.
But, you know, this is my... So some of the stats of this thing, you know, it's big. It's made up of about 4,000 or 4,500 linked servers all linked together. For the cooling, it takes about 16,000 litres of water a day to cool it.
Right, is this a good use of that water?
Indeed. And it weighs about 340 tonnes and it occupies about 3 times the size of a tennis court, apparently. So this thing is massive and it's at Oak Ridge National Labs in the States.
What do you use it for?
Well, anything you want, basically.
Who gets to use it, though?
Who gets to use it? Well, Oak Ridge is a scientific institute that was developed during the Manhattan Project for making the atomic bomb. So they were big into all the uranium separation and stuff like that. And so there are a US national lab. So people who could use it, like in my field in chemistry, you've heard of sort of in vitro and in vivo, those sorts of terms. So, and we talk of now in silico, meaning that we do calculations on molecules on computers. So we look at the structures of molecules, and provided you've got a big enough and a fast enough computer, you can do calculations on molecules to extraordinary degrees of accuracy, and you can actually figure out the structures of these things, and you can figure out how they're going to react, all without having to go into the lab, to set foot in the lab. And, it's absolutely remarkable. So this thing here, I'm sure the chemists are going to be using this, as right. well as, everybody else that, that needs computers in their sort of daily life. So all of the scientists, really, all your biologists, your molecular biologists, looking at DNA and stuff like that, Human Genome Project, all of that sort of stuff.
Would you have to book in time?
You certainly would, yes.
Does it cost?
It would cost a hatful, I would imagine, but it would be paid for out of research grants and stuff that. So, but the reason I brought this up was...
A little plug.
But so the previous institution that had this was a place called the National University of Defense Technology in Changsha in China. And I've been there four times as a teacher. And so this is kind of the West Point of China. And so all of the students, number one, you can't go out. You can't just sort of walk into the university campus itself. You've got to be taken in there by... And so they're all done up in their uniforms and stuff like that, and they've got to march off to class and everything. So they do the sort of drill in the main square and everything, and then they've got to march off to class. And then they've got to get changed back into their civilian clothes because they thought that, I wouldn't be able to handle them all sort of dressed up. I might find it slightly off-putting or whatever.
What were you teaching?
Teaching chemistry over there. So what they wanted was... somebody to teach them in English, basically, because, English is really, really important. It just is. And so they want people who are going to teach sort of advanced subjects in English. And so the head of the chemistry department came to my old university, and he went to every chemistry lecture for a semester. And at the end of that, he says, "You're the best teacher. You're coming to China."
Did you
have the choice?
You made the cut.
No, I didn't know. I made the cut, yes.
That's pretty cool.
And so it's fabulous. And so got to spend sort of 3 or 4 weeks in Changsha, and then there's other military universities around which they flew you to. So got to go to Chongqing, and got to go to Xi'an, and all over the show. Absolutely brilliant.
And they had
the fastest computer, which, really is quite astonishing. When you think about it, I mean, think of China like 40 years ago, and they didn't have... not wanting to disparage them, but they didn't really have universities and science and everything as we understand it now. Now they're the leaders, They've just gone leaps and bounds, quite extraordinary. So
very much.
Did you use that fast computer when you were in China?
No, I never actually got to see it. But they did speak of it with pride. They're sort of saying, we've got the world's fastest computer, and that's something to be bloody proud of. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, so, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So there we go.
Lastly,
yes,
Coco.
Oh, Coco.
Very sad.
Or Coco. Yeah.
The gorilla that learned sign language.
I know. And I'd seen some YouTube clips of her sort of a few years ago. My other half sort of put me onto them and everything. And they're just extraordinary that, here is a gorilla that learned how to sign and could communicate with humans. And that is just utterly, utterly, utterly astonishing. And if you go and have a look at the YouTube clips, so Coco was very friendly with kittens. And so she had a little kitten that she'd sort of adopted, and it got run over. And so Coco sort of, said that she was really sad by signing and everything. She understood what had happened. And then there's another one of her with Robin Williams, and that's just absolutely brilliant. She takes off his glasses and puts them on herself. It's just incredible.
Well, we were talking about this story. I should have said Coco passed away, right?
Yeah,
at
indeed.
Age 46 a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is, are there any other gorillas that...
That's the question. The question that I often ask myself. So, I live out in Tuturangi, and you hear all the bloody birds in the morning and everything, and you think, what are they saying? Well, what are they saying?
I did ask myself that question.
I often do as well. Yeah. How much can you say?
Yeah,
and often they're saying it to themselves.
I don't know.
Or are they...
Talking about us, we don't know.
Yeah, true.
But why can't we communicate with animals? really. I mean, you know, I've got four cats. I know that meow means feed me, but, you know, other than that.
meow means a lot of things. Get away from me.
But, you know, okay, so we have deciphered the hieroglyphs in, you know, in Egypt. And we've deciphered, I think, the old Minoan civilization. I think the writing there and stuff like that. Why can't we figure out what animals and birds and everything are saying? Why?
Because perhaps we don't. I mean, the deciphering of these languages, essentially, you're talking about linguistics, right? So you're talking about rules. There are rules, and once you figure out a rule, you can generally figure out the rest of the language.
Which presumably there's rules in animal languages, but
perhaps we. Because we often think we're so superior, perhaps it's, you know, we don't need to decipher animals because they're...
We also decipher through written proof.
Yeah, indeed, that might be the difference. It's a written thing.
Rather than an
oral thing. Whether that makes a difference, I don't know. We
have languages that are oral languages, and perhaps they're the people that need to be given the money to do this research.
Yeah, but...
Although, we do figure out... what's the word? Whale sounds?
I don't know the word. Booms or whatever. Yeah, I know. Yeah,
you know, we can figure out, we've understood that they communicate in a specific way.
Yes, yeah.
Surely that's, you know, those kind of starting points are where you go from there.
You're just missing out the actual content.
Yeah.
But you just have the intention.
Yeah.
It's already pretty great.
But, I mean, if you can do this with one gorilla, then surely you can do it with others, you know. You must be able to.
Yeah, the point about the birds. I mean, also birds, the migration of birds, they must talk to each other about that to plan that. Yeah.
Time for that bloody long flight again.
Yeah.
The thing with the she was raised by humans. What about the gorillas that are out in the wild or whatever? You know, how are you going to... teach sign language to them? Like,
yeah.
I don't know, like, how are we actually going to go about this if that's what we're really considering?
True, it's an unfair experiment because if these animals are raised in captivity, they are learning our language.
Yes, and there was sort of some concern, you know, expressed about that the fact that this, you know, poor thing had been raised in captivity its whole life and it's never gone out and, you know, met its own kind and everything. But
true, you know, would it be able to communicate with its own kind?
Geez, they must have done that experiment. You'd think... I don't know.
Because that's messed up.
Planet of the Apes proved a lot of things.
If you look at humans who have, like, those, like, abandoned, lost wild children, whatever, that have been abandoned in the forest or that have basically grew up
spent a few years without human contact, yeah.
They are pretty much unable to, they haven't used communicate language that we use, so they are unable to communicate. So
yeah. But one last thing, I'm going to sneak in again. It's all about me today.
Okay.
But I was in Mexico quite a few years ago and out in the jungle, and there was a monkey in a cage there, and, you know, you could go up and pat the monkey and stuff. And I went up and patted the monkey, and you're right in the middle of nowhere and everything, and then this monkey just put out its big old arm and it's just put it around me. And it just wouldn't let go, and it was just so incredible. God, I was crying. It was just and it just wouldn't let go. You know, I was like his mum or something or dad or whatever, but it just couldn't get away. And it was just gorgeous. You know, it was this baby orphan monkey or whatever that just been put in this cage, and oh God, didn't want to leave.
That's so hard.
You know, animals are cool.
Very cool. Beautiful. And we should wrap up. But somebody's texted in, and this is they say my wife has adenocarcinoma, which is in her lungs, no cure. We're trying Keytruda at 10K every 3 weeks, not funded by Pharmac.
Yes.
What the fuck?
Well, that's the decision that Pharmac has to make on our behalf, you know, and that's got to
be
our
which
drugs can we afford to fund and which ones can't we? I wouldn't want to be the person that makes that decision.
Was this one of the issues that came into the TPPA? Was that something?
Yes, that they don't like Pharmac in the TPPA,
right.
Yes.
So, but would the TPPA, would that then limit choices like that, like Pharmac's choices in terms of which?
That would, well, as I understand it, we'd end up paying more. Because the Americans think that, I mean, it's sort of a bulk buy sort of thing, if I can use a crude analogy like that, that You sort of enter into negotiations, and you know we'll pay you that for that drug if you know you give us this drug and blah 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 blah. So there seems to be a lot of horse trading and stuff going on. As a result, we get presumably some drugs at better prices, but it means that we don't get things like Keytruda, you know, because it does cost a lot. And you know, my heart goes out to the listener who sent that in. I mean, it's a horrible, horrible situation to be put in, and yeah, good luck.
Yeah. Hiki a koutou. Thank you for texting in.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Alan.
Okay.
See you next week. Okay, no, we won't.
You're away. I think she's half away already. I think her mind's in Europe already.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you guys won't see each other for 5 weeks. Yeah. That's a very long week.
Oh, my goodness me.
Have fun, though.
Yes, keep warm.
Yes, I will. Okay. It's going to be sunny there, though. Anyway.
That was Dear Science.